Today is Monday, the 9th of February, and this is the World Socialist Website. International opposition to Trump and ICE shape the opening of the Milan Olympics by Alex Lantier. The 2026 Winter Olympics has seen an outpouring of opposition to Trump and the presence in Milan of agents of his murderous Immigration and Customs Enforcement ICE agency. Italy's fascist Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni welcomed US Vice President J.D. Vance to Milan and placed the city on lockdown. Nearly 6,000 heavily armed Italian police and military officers are patrolling the streets. Snipers are deployed on the rooftops. No-fly zones have been established across the city, and a special decree allows police to jail people in Milan for 12 hours on the flimsy grounds that police suspect they might engage in violent protest. Nonetheless, what has attracted world attention to the Games, beyond the athletic feats performed by the Olympians, is not the machinery of police state rule, but expressions of the growing political opposition to fascist policies on both sides of the Atlantic. Protests have shaken Milan, expressions of anti-war sentiment marked the Games' opening ceremony, and US Olympians publicly criticized the Trump administration. Illegal ICE occupations of US cities, deportations of immigrants, and the executions of Renee Nicole Good and Alex Preti in Minneapolis are shocking and radicalizing masses of people across Europe and beyond. It is becoming evident to working people around the world that they confront in the Trump administration a US government unlike any they have ever seen, an utterly lawless regime that brazenly announces and enacts fascist policies. Events in Milan reflect the initial stages of the response this is provoking among broader layers of the population internationally. On January 30 to 31, thousands in Milan protested the announcement that ICE would attend the Games. They rallied on April 25 Square, named after the April 25, 1945 general strike and armed insurrection of the Italian resistance in Milan, against Nazi and Italian fascist authorities that led to the capture and execution of fascist dictator Benito Mussolini. The eruption of anger shocked Italian officials, and Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani denounced criticisms of ICE. Quote, "It's not like the SS are coming," end quote, he said, referring to the genocidal Nazi SS paramilitaries. This did not calm the situation, however, as clear resemblances between ICE and a Nazi militia are evident to masses of people. ICE is an organ of police state terror overseeing mass repression, deportations, mass detention, and extrajudicial murder on behalf of a ruling class that views working people as expendable. Protests against social conditions in Italy, the Israeli genocide in Gaza, and the ICE presence in Milan continue. Thousands rallied this weekend, again in Milan, defying the police lockdown of the city to march toward the Olympic Village, clashing with riot police who fired tear gas and water cannons into the crowd. Anti-war or veiled sentiments of opposition to Trump made their way even into the scripted proceedings of the opening ceremony. Milanese rapper Gali performed Gianni Rodari's famous 1948 anti-war children's poem Promemoria, while US South African actress Charlize Theron read a quote from former South African President Nelson Mandela opposing racial prejudice. The 60,000-strong crowd at the opening ceremony booed US Vice President Vance when, during the applause for the US Olympic delegation, footage of Vance and his wife Usha arriving at the stadium was broadcast on the stadium screens. The crowd ignored appeals from Olympic organisers not to boo while US athletes were marching. Finally, the Trump and Maloney governments have been deeply shaken by statements made by Olympic athletes themselves. These are, in many cases, individuals of extraordinary athletic talent who have devoted years of their lives to rigorous training. Many live in the Olympic Village during the competition and meet athletes from around the world, fostering international camaraderie and respect. Their statements make clear that the nationalism and flag-waving that saturate the media coverage of the Olympics is not something they embrace voluntarily, but something that is imposed upon them. Asked whether he felt comfortable representing his country during ice operations, US freestyle skier Hunter Hess replied, quote, "Just because I'm wearing the flag doesn't mean I represent everything that's going on in the US," end quote. His fellow US freestyle skier Chris Lillis said he was heartbroken about ice actions and broader events in the United States. Quote, "I think that as a country, we need to focus on respecting everybody's rights and making sure that we're treating our citizens as well as anybody with love and respect. I hope that when people look at athletes competing in the Olympics, they realize that that's the America that we're trying to represent," end quote. Such statements are part of a long tradition of critical moments in Olympic history that have carried powerful political significance. There was the iconic 1968 protest by US athletes who raised their fists in the Black Power salute in order to oppose racism, only a few months after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. During the 1936 Berlin Olympics hosted by the Hitler regime, Black US athlete Jesse Owens upset Nazi racial ideology with 4 gold medals. German long jumper Luz Long gave Owens key advice after Owens committed 2 fouls during an initial round of that event, allowing Owens to qualify and advance and ultimately win the gold. Luz, who won the silver medal, publicly congratulated Owens arm in arm in Hitler's presence. Statements like those of Hunt and Lillis reflect a growing hostility among broad layers of the world's population to what governments like those of Trump and Maloney represent. A deep-rooted social and political radicalization has begun against reactionary governments that are isolated and despised. Despite censorship and police state repression, this mass sentiment has begun to force its way to the surface of events. Unsurprisingly, Trump and Maloney have responded with degraded denunciations of athletes and protesters opposing them during the Games. While Trump attacked Hunter Hess on Truth Social as, quote, "a real loser, says he doesn't represent his country in the current Winter Olympics," end quote, Maloney attacked those protesting during the Olympics as, quote, "enemies of Italy and of Italians," end quote. But it is not hard to see who the enemies of the people are. It is the fascist representative of the ruling capitalist oligarchy who resort to war, genocide, stoking anti-immigrant racism, austerity, and police state repression, not workers and youth protesting against them. Moods of opposition are growing internationally in line with a resurgence of class struggle and an activation of the social force that can take economic and political power out of the hands of the capitalist oligarchy, the working class. The mass protests in Minneapolis in January against the police murders of Good and Pretty are expressions of a developing social upheaval in the United States and internationally. Indeed, the day of the Olympics opening ceremony, amidst ongoing strikes by 46,000 nurses in the US, port workers in Italy and across the Mediterranean launched a one-day "Dock Workers Do Not Work for War" strike. Their strike delayed the arrival of arms headed for the Middle East and the genocide in Gaza, blocking ships bearing weapons in ports where union officials kept dock workers on the job. These events point to the possibility and necessity of the international unification of the struggles of the working class. The conscious goal of such a movement must be the mobilization of workers' social and industrial power to bring down capitalist governments pursuing policies of austerity, imperialist war and dictatorship, and to transfer power to the working people, building a socialist society in which social and economic resources are used to meet social need, not private profit. Minnesota police riot against protesters outside Whipple Federal Building by Jonas Bookvist. On February 7, a combined force of Hennepin County Sheriff's Office and Minnesota State Patrol troopers carried out mass arrests of protesters outside the Bishop Henry Whipple Federal Building. The building serves as the nerve center for Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, and Customs and Border Protection, CBP, operations that have terrorized immigrants and protesters in Minneapolis and throughout Minnesota. The Minnesota Department of Transportation, MnDOT, dispatched snowplows to block entry points to the Whipple building. Ranks of helmeted, baton-wielding state troopers and sheriff's deputies moved in on protesters who have held daily vigils to oppose ICE operations. Using a bullhorn, a Hennepin County sheriff announced, quote, "Due to the unlawful conduct and threat to public safety, I hereby declare this to be an unlawful assembly," end quote. Police forces advanced, shouting, quote, move back," end quote. Protesters responded that the real criminals were the ICE agents inside the Whipple building, and that it was ICE that was, quote, "violating a federal judge's orders," end quote, and, quote, "violating our Fourth Amendment rights," end quote. State troopers and deputies then charged, wrestling protesters to the ground and hauling them away. One witness wrote on social media, quote, "Hennepin County sheriffs declared an unlawful assembly at the Whipple building, despite protesters staying behind the fences, out of the road and well off federal property. They backed protesters into the South Fort Snelling parking lot and then began arrests, kneeling on people and even shooting out a car window with rubber rounds. HCSO may not literally be ICE, but they are bosom buddies and should be treated with equal levels of disdain," end quote. Local media reported that 54 people were arrested on Saturday. The Minnesota State Patrol confirmed that 25 of those detained by state troopers were arrested for allegedly failing to disperse. Prior to police declaring an unlawful assembly, fascist Jake Lang menaced the hundreds peacefully protesting from the back of a rented U-Haul truck. Video of the incident shows Lang in the back of the truck with a speakerphone. The fascist proclaimed, "Jesus is King," in between slurs against Somali people and praise for the immigration police. Joining Lang in the back of a truck was a man with a paintball gun and another man with a large wooden cross. Lang, a violent participant in the January 6, 2021 attack on Congress, was arrested earlier in the week on felony charges after defacing an anti-ICE sculpture in front of the Minnesota State Capitol in St. Paul. However, Lang does not appear to have been among those arrested during Saturday's police crackdown. More than a month after Renee Nicole Good was murdered by ICE agent Jonathan Ross, and more than 2 weeks after Alex Pretty was gunned down by CBP agents Jesus Jesse Ochoa and Ramondo Gutierrez, none of the killers have been arrested or charged with a crime. These events underscore the real meaning of the January 26 phone call between Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and President Trump concerning Homeland Security's violent Operation Metro Surge. In the wake of the phone call, Walz's office issued a statement claiming the conversation between the governor and Trump had been productive. Walz said, quote, "We need to reduce the number of federal agents in Minnesota," and called on Trump to, quote, "work with the state in a more coordinated fashion on immigration enforcement," end quote. Following the call, Trump dispatched his so-called border czar, Tom Homan, to Minnesota to meet with the Minnesota Sheriff's Association and the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. Homan declared that the meetings had produced unprecedented cooperation in continuing Operation Metro Surge. Under this arrangement, roughly 700 ICE and CBP agents will be freed up for deployment elsewhere, while Minnesota law enforcement agencies will collaborate with the remaining 2,000 federal agents. The use of state troopers and the mobilisation of MnDOT to kettle protesters at the Whipple Federal Building has stripped away the mask from Walz's posturing against Trump. Both the Minnesota State Patrol and MnDOT operate under Walz's authority. Responsibility for this police operation cannot be shifted away from the governor or the Democratic Party. Walz's rhetoric has undergone a sharp reversal. Earlier, he described ICE operations by saying, quote, "Donald Trump's modern-day Gestapo is scooping folks up off the streets," end quote. In a public address last month, Walz said the occupation amounted to a, quote, "campaign of organized brutality against the people of Minnesota by our own federal government," end quote. These denunciations have now given way to the open cooperation with the immigration police. Claims promoted by the Democratic Party and the media that violence has declined following Homan's arrival are lies. The Democrats are far more fearful that protest actions by the working class and progressive sections of the middle class could develop into a mass political movement directed not only against the immigration police, but against the capitalist system itself, which is responsible for layoffs, the destruction of healthcare, attacks on social welfare programs, and imperialist war. Phrases such as general strike, along with the accurate characterization of Trump's actions as fascist and aimed at establishing a dictatorship, are increasingly entering the vocabulary of broad layers of workers. Protests continue across Minnesota. Thousands of people are volunteering as constitutional observers, documenting ICE and CBP violence, escorting schoolchildren, and supplying immigrant families with food and protection as federal agents seek to hunt them down. At the same time, the national media is carrying out its own drawdown of coverage. Reporting on events in Minnesota has been quietly dropped. The goal, shared with the Democratic Party and the trade union bureaucracy, is to bring the protests to an end and wear down the movement. Walz's policy of deploying police against demonstrators while urging residents to place their faith in the courts and the November elections is aimed at demobilising the growing opposition to fascism and dictatorship. The principal obstacle to the development of a general strike and a broader struggle against authoritarianism is the illusion that the Democratic Party can be pressured to fight Trump. The Democratic Party, including its Minnesota affiliate, the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, defends the capitalist profit system just as fiercely as its Republican counterparts. The February attack on protesters at the Whipple Building must therefore be understood as an exposure of the political bankruptcy of the Democratic Party. Because of its loyalty to capitalism, it is worse than useless in the struggles ahead. Through its actions, the party has declared its collaboration with the fascist in the White House. The working class must build new, independent organisations, including rank-and-file committees, to unite workers across industries and initiate a conscious struggle against war, dictatorship, and social inequality. Quote, "They represented Marathon, not us," end quote. Refinery workers denounce USW sellout in national patent deal. By Tom Hall. Refinery workers across the United States are speaking out to the World Socialist website against the tentative national patent agreement announced by the United Steelworkers, USW, covering 30,000 oil refinery workers. The tentative agreement provides wage increases totaling approximately 15% over 4 years, along with a one-time $2,500 signing bonus. At the same time, it leaves intact forced overtime regimes, limited sick leave, and long-standing staffing and safety issues. The USW bureaucracy has moved quickly to present the deal as the best that can be achieved, while signalling that individual locals, most notably at BP Whiting in Indiana, may be left to fight alone if they reject it. To defeat this sellout, refinery workers need to take the struggle into their own hands by forming rank-and-file committees at every refinery and petrochemical plant. These committees should be elected by workers on the shop floor, not appointed by the union, and used to communicate across refineries, share information the USW is withholding, and coordinate a common response to the tentative agreement. In particular, refinery workers should mobilise to prevent the USW from isolating a strike at BP Whiting, where workers have authorised a strike and management is demanding even deeper concessions. One Whiting worker told the WSWS, quote, "We're getting 15% over 4 years and a middle finger, and maybe just the middle finger at BP Whiting. How does this make sense? And to top it all off, I'm sure if we, at the BP Whiting refinery, go out on strike, we'll be on our own. The USW's stance should be every refinery signs or we go out, plain and simple," end quote. At the HF Sinclair refinery in El Dorado, Kansas, one worker said the proposed wage increase does not even cover rising out-of-pocket costs. Quote, "That big whopping 4% raise barely even covers our insurance premiums raise for this year. We voted on 25% wage increases. Go fight for it. If a strike is needed, guess what? We voted for it, so issue a strike. The USW did not represent us. They represented Marathon. I would love to give the higher-ups in the union a piece of my mind, and I would say a lot of their members feel the same as I do," end quote. At Chevron's Richmond, California refinery, a worker pointed to the contrast between the workers' sacrifices and what the company and unions are offering in return. Quote, "A fire took place here last February of 2025, he said. Operators and firefighters working alongside each other kept this event from going catastrophic. Meanwhile, we have forced overtime hours of 12 to 13 hour shifts, 6 to 14 days straight, with 1 or 2 days off in between for over an entire year. We work to keep this company going and forced overtime and sick time stays the same, and vacation hours stay the same, and we get a slap in the face with wages. The $2,500 signing bonus is a joke too," end quote. Workers in Northern California emphasised the crushing impact of cost of living increases and the erosion of time off. Quote, "A slap in the face. We deserve better. We sacrifice our lives, our time, and our health for these companies. We work long hours, away from family. We miss birthdays, anniversaries, holidays. We have to be forced to work because we don't have enough time to be able to take days off liberally. We risk a write-up for a day off because we only get the total of 8 sick days for the year," end quote. The worker added, quote, "Vacation hours shouldn't be time that's used for health issues, family emergencies or appointments. These companies expect total dedication from us and don't want to give anything back in return. They've taken incentive programs away and replaced them with recognition programs that we ourselves implement for each other. They reduce bonuses and blame economic issues but brag about record profits for shareholders. They reduce safety practices and programs and say streamlining and productivity is the goal. These practices need to change. We deserve better," end quote. Another Northern California worker understood regional disparities ignored by the national agreement. Quote, "Living in California, the cost of living is so much higher than the Midwest and the Gulf states. We've been behind the inflation curve for years, and this settlement keeps us behind the curve," end quote. A contractor working at Marathon's Galveston Bay refinery, though not covered by the USW agreement, offered a broader assessment of conditions facing workers in the United States. Commenting on the claim that there is no money for workers while trillions are spent on war, he said, quote, "That's messed up. That's just how it is in America. I mean, we're like a third world country. They try to make it seem like we're the greatest in the world, but what is it really?" End quote. He continued, quote, "How they talk about third world country is that, you know, people don't have nothing. We're working to pay bills. You know what I mean? It's not like we can save, you know, half of our check. They're already taking a third of our check in taxes. And if we aren't working, they try to get some kind of assistance. The attitude is, get out of here. You're a bum. It's just messed up how they're taking all our money. Kids that was in college needed loan forgiveness. They acted like it was a bad thing. But then if Israel need money, it's here you go. The country is trash. I mean, you can't even ride down I-10 without being backed up or full of construction. If you see people working on the highway, there might be 8 workers on the whole interstate, you know what I mean? That's why I say we're like a third world country. We got nothing. We're just crumbling. Everything's crumbling. But to distract workers, every year, they get a new bogeyman. Now it's the Muslims are the bogeyman. You know, back then it was the welfare people, the blacks, you know, always somebody to make you hate," end quote. He also spoke about working conditions for contractors at the refinery, the country's largest. Quote, "We're getting 7-12s, that's 12-hour shifts 7 days a week. We get 84 hours a week, but then they changed the rule. Now they pay us 80 and a half hours because they're charging us for lunch, 30 minutes a day. It's the overtime the people take the job for," he explained. Quote, "That's why people do it, you know. Some people go to work 2 or 3 jobs to make ends meet. It's capitalism. You know what I mean? It's wrong, big time. I mean, what's the point of having $2 trillion when your brother is starving? But they got so much control and they got the system set up the way they want, to where you are just living to work or you are going to be living on the street. You don't have a choice," end quote. Online Meeting, The Nurses' Strike and the Movement Against Dictatorship, by the WSWS Healthcare Workers Newsletter. The World Socialist website, WSWS, will host an online meeting on the way forward for the 15,000 striking New York nurses and the 31 striking healthcare workers in California and Hawaii at 7:30 p.m. EST on Tuesday, February 10. Please access this article to register for the meeting. The eruption of strikes by healthcare workers on both coasts is a response to the hospital system's relentless drive to obtain ever greater profits. The strikes also reflect mass opposition to federal government's dismantling of public health, the spread of anti-vaccine propaganda, and the resurgence of preventable diseases such as measles. But the trade union apparatus is determined to shut down the strikes as quickly as possible and impose the demands of management. At the same time, workers and young people are leading mass demonstrations across the country to protest the mass roundups being conducted by ICE. The murder of Alex Pretty, a VA nurse in Minneapolis, shows the assault on immigrants is the leading edge of the ruling class offensive against the entire working class. Through police repression, the invocation of the Insurrection Act and the nationalization of elections, President Donald Trump intends to establish a dictatorship on behalf of the financial oligarchy that he represents. The opposition to these attacks is growing, and the potential for a united struggle to bring down Trump is enormous. But the most immediate obstacle that workers face is a trade union bureaucracy which seek to prevent any struggle against the capitalist system at the root of the crisis. They direct workers' appeals to Democrats, who uphold the profit system and are collaborating in Trump's rampage. Workers must establish their organizational and political independence by forming rank-and-file committees at every workplace. Striking healthcare workers must unite with the growing movement against dictatorship. The wealth of the financial oligarchy must be seized and redirected toward healthcare, education, and jobs for all. For these articles and more, including coverage of workers' struggles around the world and socialism AI, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Jenny Campbell.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.